Open up your Bibles to 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. You know, when I study more and more the writings of the Apostle Paul, I get a new impression of Paul. Somehow in my mind, I guess from younger days, I've always entertained the idea that he's a man not given to much emotion, a very calm, cool, collected sort of fellow. But the more I read his writings, I find that he's rather an emotional fellow. And he had very strong emotions at times. Not only did he have strong emotions, he had very strong feeling for people. He was a man that seemed to have a great deal of love and appreciation for other people. And he could get discouraged. That comes out in the lesson tonight, indirectly, if you notice the verse. And familiar with the history, you can tell what's happening there. But we have gone down through verse 5 here of this third chapter. And we're talking about Timothy's trip over there back to Thessalonica. That's still the general topic that's here in this lesson tonight. And Paul is again dealing with that. The second division of the chapter starts here at verse 6. It has to do with the effect of Timothy's report about the church at Thessalonica. And I guess we might say the sixth verse is his return and his report, two R's, because that's what it's about. But now when Timotheus came from you unto us and brought us good tidings of your faith and charity, and that ye have good remembrance of us always, desiring greatly to see us as we also to see you. Now, there's a great deal in that verse, and so let's break it apart a little bit if we can. Let's go back up there to the very first expression. But now when Timotheus came from you unto us. Evidently, Silas and Paul are there at Corinth, and Timothy is coming in from Thessalonica. There are some that believe Timothy and probably Silas came together. If you read Acts 18 and 5, and well, let's go there and read that and let you make your own deduction on it. If that is the time being referred to, it would sound like that the two men came at the same time from another place there. But let's read that fifth verse of Acts 18. When Silas and Timotheus were come from Macedonia, I would assume if this is a time that probably Timothy has left Thessalonica, going up and met Silas there in Macedonia, and then come on down to where Paul was. Paul was pressed in the spirit and testified to the Jews that Jesus was the Christ. If I were to literally translate the first part of that verse, it would go like this. But Timothy, having just come, meaning that he had just walked in, so to speak, he's there just for a very few minutes, like when he started to write this letter. Somebody said, well, how long did Timothy stay in Thessalonica? Probably a very long time. He went up there to find out two things, as we'll learn later, but he stayed up there long enough to find out something about their love and something about their faith. That's what he testified about here when he came back. So, I don't know. It would seem to me, from what I read in the account over there in the book of Acts, and compare it with the lesson here, that while Paul has pretty well been stationed there where he's at, he hasn't done a whole lot of work for the Lord while he was there. Seemed like he got discouraged after he was run out of Thessalonica, and then had to make a speedy retreat from another place or two. And so he more or less kind of got in a state of despondency, seemed to me like. His two co-workers are gone, he's there all along, and all these pagans all around him. And so he'd been, what I'd say, given to a little bit of, we'll say he got discouraged. And that he was kind of inactive for a while. Sort of backslid, maybe we'd term it. So, well, I hate to think about saying that about Paul. Well, it seems like that's about what he did. But then when these other fellows came, he got his old zeal back again, and he's ready to go. That's the way human nature is. I know something about that myself. So just as soon as Timothy came back and gave this good report of the people at Thessalonica, it's just like a shot in the arm to the Apostle Paul. Man, it stirred him up all over again when he found out not only was the church stable and doing well, but actually was increasing in a lot of the ways that he wanted them to. So he was very delighted to get this report. It seems to me when I study the life of Paul, who was perhaps the greatest missionary in the New Testament, started more churches almost than anybody else that I know of, seemed like that his whole soul was bound up with these churches that he started. He had a real concern for their spiritual growth and progress, and he constantly wanted to stay in touch with them, even though he like organized them and moved on and somebody else came in to take over the work. He never did lose contact with these churches that he started. And seemed like that he just lived for all these things that happened in the churches there. And if he didn't know what was going on in the churches, then he was very disappointed and upset, because that was his whole life. Well, we read about the devil in the verse just before up here. And I'm sure that this news that made the Apostle Paul come alive again, as it were, must have made the devil very sad. It doesn't say, but I can only make my own deduction on that, because he probably said, well, I got old Paul down now. He's not going to organize any more churches. He's not going to preach. He's down. And then when he gets this good report, he's all ready to go all over again. And so I guess the devil's pretty disappointed by this time. Now, we have some remarkable language here. This term, good tidings, in that next expression there, it's really the word that is used for the preaching of the gospel in the Bible. It is a Greek word, angelion, I believe, or something like that. I may not be saying it quite right. But it really comes out in English evangelizing or evangelization-like. And so this glad tidings there, he's saying that the report that he brought was as good as the gospel when I first heard it. That must have been pretty good news. Good news from a far country that was very delighting to the Apostle Paul. And so it's actually the word for preaching the gospel. But what was so good about the news was that they hadn't had their faith shaken. You know, that's always a great concern that I have with people when they come into the truth. I'm always afraid somebody will come along and mess them up. We just had an event just like that very recently happened. We had been in contact with a man over in Finland. We had got him pretty well, we thought, straightened out on some things. Then some other preachers got a hold of him, and they've got him all messed up now. And while Brother Bob Keller went and baptized the man, from what the pastor of the church tells me, if he don't straighten up, he's fixing to be excluded for heresy. So it just goes to show that what can happen to young converts, just to illustrate, so I can feel what the Apostle Paul did there. There's nothing that grieves a preacher any more than if he's taught people the truth, to have some fellow to come in and mess them all up then after that, so that they go away from the doctrines that they were taught in the beginning. Well, the good news that Paul has was they were persevering in the faith. They hadn't given up the faith. Nobody had messed them up. All the persecution hadn't done them any harm. They were holding out for the faith. Somebody said, well, what is the faith? Well, probably in this context, it doesn't just mean saving faith. It would be the system of revealed truth that's in the Bible. And really, faith is more than just belief. It's a life. It's a life that springs from God and leads to God. And so really, faith is all about God. That's a definition you don't often hear, but looking at the context here, it seems to be pretty well borne out. Not only had they been keeping the faith, but they had been keeping up their charity, our love. You know, Paul liked those two words, love and faith. You might recall back in the very beginning of this epistle, back over in chapter 1, verse 3 there, remembering without ceasing your work of faith and labor of love and patience of hope. And there he's got all three of them, faith, love, and hope. Over here he's just got faith and hope. He's left out. But anyway, he's got the two great themes that he likes, faith and love. They're all right there together. Now, quite often he puts stress on that. Look at some of his other writings where he deals with this topic. Like over in Galatians chapter 5 and verse 6. For in Jesus Christ neither circumcision availeth anything nor uncircumcision, but faith which worketh by love. He's put them together again, see there, faith and love. You really can't separate them, I don't think. A lot of other times in his writings, and I was thinking just of a few of them this afternoon, over here in the book of Philemon, a little book that's hard to find because we don't read it enough. Note what he says there in verse 5. Hearing of thy love and faith. So when Paul began to examine the church, there were two things he was concerned about. First of all, what kind of love did they have, one for another and the Lord? And what kind of faith did they have? What did they believe about God and the Bible? Hearing of thy love and faith, which thou hast toward the Lord Jesus and toward all saints. Then Paul was not the only man concerned about that. The Apostle John was too. Because in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 23, we have this statement. And this is the commandment, that we should believe on His name, the name of His Son, Jesus Christ, and love one another as He gave us commandment. So there is to be love and there is to be faith. John uses this word faith and love a lot in this epistle too. Very much like Paul did. I maintain that love is the fruit of faith. If people come around and they don't have any love for God and for the Lord's people, then they don't have any faith. Because love is the evidence of faith. You can't separate the two of them. And this love is to be impartial and to be universal. It's to be for all the saints, for all of God's people there. Then he says, and that ye have good remembrance of us always. Paul, like I said, was only there with them a very few weeks, but they learned to love him during that time. And there was very strong love between the church at Thessalonica and the Apostle Paul, and I'm sure that Timothy and Silas were included in that as well. But here the stress is upon the fact that the Thessalonians loved the Apostle Paul, their teacher, their spiritual instructor. And the loving remembrance of a former teacher is a Christian duty. I do not believe that any person will ever forget the individual that brought the good news to him. I'll certainly never forget the man that declared the gospel the night that I was converted. And he's an old man now, still alive, unless he's died. I don't know. I don't keep up very well. But he'd be way up on his ears now. I know I talked to him not too long ago in a letter that I got maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It's the last time we've had any correspondence. But he'd be well in his 80s, if not almost beyond that. But anyway, they had a fun remembrance of the Apostle Paul and his teaching there among them. It seems like that there was always a great attachment between Paul and these converts that he had. They seemed to have a lot of great love one for another. I don't know how you can read his epistles without failing to see that. Like over here in 2 Corinthians chapter 7. Some statements very strong in the writings of Paul if you pay attention to them. For 2 Corinthians 7 and 7. And not by his coming only, but by the consolation wherewith he was comforted in you, when he told us of your earnest desire, your mourning, your fervent mind toward me, so that I rejoice the more. He was always wanting to know how the converts were doing, and he rejoiced in it. Other places you can see it is Paul writing in Philippians chapter 1, in verse 8. For God is my record, how greatly I long after you all in the bowels of Jesus Christ. So that I'd like to be there and meet with the church again. I'd like to be there and fellowship with all the people of that assembly. He evidently had very strong feelings for the church at Rome, because he expressed that also in his writings. In the very beginning of that epistle over there in chapter 1, in verse 11, for I long to see you all. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end you may be established. He liked to see people. I mean, face to face. There's a lot of people that I talk with on the phone every week that I'd like to sit down and talk about 2 or 3 hours with. But neither one of us can, because of time and great distance between us. And Paul felt that way. He didn't have telephones and telegraphs like we have. As a matter of fact, if you wrote a letter in that day, you couldn't. You said, well, go down and put it in the post office. There wasn't any post office, strictly speaking. And if you wasn't a part of the government, then you didn't get your mail carried at all. The only way you could get a letter from one place to another was give it to a man and send it over there to that place. And that's what Paul did. A lot of these letters here, they were sent by individuals from one place to another. In other words, use your own mail carrier is what it amounted to. So Paul, all he could do was write letters. But he would have liked to have gone there and seen these people again. And no doubt he probably baptized a lot of them. Was there when their churches were organized. But he didn't get to go back very, very often. Didn't get to go back very often at all. Then we want to look at some of the other verses, though that one is certainly filled with a lot of information there. Because he goes on to say in the latter part of that, though, that he desired greatly to see us, and also we to see you. In other words, they wanted to see one another, strictly speaking there. Then in verse 7, we see how that he was comforted, how that he had a great deal of satisfaction out of that good report that Timothy had brought. Therefore, brethren, we were comforted over you in all our affliction and distress by your faith. So the Thessalonians were the personal ground for the encouragement which the missionaries received when they were in a time of distress and in time of great affliction. So here's Paul. He's having a hard time. He's being persecuted, being run out of town on rail. But in fact, when he gets this news about how well some of these churches are doing, especially the church at Thessalonica, that he was only with for about 3 weeks, he said, man, said, that really makes me feel good. So I don't know of anything. Makes my day more than that does. So here's a report that put new life and spirit in the Apostle Paul. And looking at Paul and how happy it made him when he heard the good news of them persevering in the faith. I can imagine if Timothy had come back and said, well, the heretics have entered in and they've completely spoiled the work. And Paul probably would have sobbed like a baby. It would have broke his heart. He was a man of great feeling. And when he found out they were persevering in the faith, he said, man, put me on the mountaintop spiritually. But had the report been otherwise, it would have broken his heart had he heard that they departed from the faith. I don't know of anything any more distressing to the man of God than to hear that somebody that he has taught the truth to has forsaken it. To me, that's the ultimate insult. I don't think that a preacher can be insulted any more than that, than for somebody to have the truth taught to him and then some fellow just go right against all of it and go off with some heretic that comes along. And it's very sad. You wonder how people can do that. I can see how people can leave error and come to truth. Never had any problem with that. But what I can't understand is how that a person that says he believes the truth can leave it and go after something that's not true. That just blows my mind completely. I guess I'm just a dumb country boy. But I can't understand that. I can understand how a man, like I said, would leave error and come to truth. That's very simple. But to leave truth and go after fairy tales, oh my, that to me, I just simply cannot understand. I guess what Paul's saying here in this verse, in a manner of speaking, was, said, when I got this good news, that it made my life worth living. Really made life worth living to find out that the church was holding on to the faith there. Then we come down to verse 9. Actually, verse 8, which is very brief, and then go on to 9. For now we live. In other words, made my life worth living. If you stand fast in the Lord. Paul is greatly concerned there about the church standing fast. There's a lot of stress put in the Bible on having done all to stand fast for the Lord. One of the things I think wrong with the world today is that it's pretty hard to get people to take a stand on something. You ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed these politicians, they get them on the TV and the like, and they say, well, now, we want to know what you think about this. And when he gets to answering, you about decided you don't know what he believes about it because he don't give a straight answer. And sometimes you can ask the preacher a question about the Bible, and you get what I call a rather evasive answer. Sometimes we probably ought to be more honest and say, we don't know. Might be a simple answer to some questions. Are we not sure, maybe? But sometimes you get an evasive answer. But I like a man that'll tell me where he stands. Now, there's a man that I know real well, have known for many years, and there's a lot of things we don't agree on. He'd tell you that, and I'll tell you that too, but I won't go into his name. But anyway, I have a lot of respect for that man because there's one thing I can always say about him. Any time that I ever asked him where he stood, he told me straight out, whether I liked it or not. So there's one thing I can say for him. I may not be able to say a lot of other things. I can tell you that he'll give a straight answer. He will take a stand on what he believes. And I have respect for anybody that'll take a stand for what they believe. And I don't have a lot of respect for anybody that won't take a stand for what he believes. And so Paul wanted to know that they were taking a stand here. And they were taking a stand. I think it's a time in our country that we need to take a stand. Time in our churches when we need to take a stand. Just every wind of doctrine won't do. Just any way won't do. Remember the old Baptist, they asked him one time why Baptists immersed, and he's just a country fellow, and he gave him good country logic. He said, well, the only thing I can tell you is this. He said, if any way would do, said, why wouldn't nothing at all do just as well? So when you think about the logic of that, that's about as good an answer as anybody could give. The truth of the matter is, anything won't do. There are things that are right. There are things that are true. There are things that are wrong, and you can never make them right. And so you do have to take a stand sometime. So Paul was happy to know that they had taken a stand in the Lord. They're standing up to the devil. Very important thing. And then he was thankful for them in verse 9. And this is about the third time he's had this outburst of thanksgiving there. For what thanks can we render to God again for you? For all the joy wherewith we joy for your sakes before our God. Like I said, this is the third time he's been thankful for the people at Thessalonica. Sometimes we are thankful for things and we don't tell people about it. I'm not going to lay all the guilt on you because I've many times been guilty of that. But the Apostle Paul was a man that could express his thanksgiving. He told people about it. It's in a lot of people's heart, but they don't express it. And I've been guilty myself. Then he says here that we joy for your sakes. I'd say that's a pure, holy joy in God's presence. And now if you can have a joy in the presence of God, then I'd say it would be a good joy. Matthew Henry said to have joy in the presence of God was to spiritualize your joy. I'd say that's a pretty good way to express it too. But now what's he doing here? He's thankful for the Thessalonians, but to whom did he give the thanks? To God. He gave thanks to God. So if somebody has been a help to you, if somebody has been a blessing to you, while it's not wrong to express that thanksgiving to them, don't forget that God put it in their hearts to do it. And so really, God should get all of the glory. We should never take credit to ourselves for something that only God can do. And people sometimes are inclined to do that. And then I note that he wanted them to have their faith strengthened. Prayed that it might be perfected there in verse 10. Night and day, praying exceedingly. That sounds like more than just two or three words. Say, well, did he pray all day and all night? No, he didn't pray all day and all night, but he prayed sometime during every day and sometimes during every night. The answer to that is pretty simple. And when he prayed exceedingly. Sound like fervent, effectual prayers, we call it. That we might see your face. He said, I'd like to go back and see you. He said, Timothy just told me how wonderful it would be if I could just go back. The persecution would not allow Paul to go back at this point. He had a lot of enemies because he once had been a persecutor of the church, and now they're persecuting him for the church that he's standing up for. Then he goes on to say that we might perfect that which is lacking in your faith. So, well, what was wrong with their faith? I thought he just said that it was pretty strong. Well, the very best men that live upon this earth are still lacking in their faith. Peter was lacking. He is an apostle. Nobody has reached the fullness of the measure of the stature of Christ when it comes to faith. Faith is perfected by degrees. Faith increases. Faith grows. And it ought to be greater in our latter years than it was in our former years. Faith grows exceedingly. Take an expression out of the other place where Paul wrote. Now, evidently, the faith had grown, especially while Timothy had been over there with him for this time. So then, pastoral care and doctrinal instruction is necessary to growth in faith. So, well, where was their faith deficient? Probably in a lot of areas of knowledge. I mean, only 3 weeks of preaching, they didn't hear too much during that time. You know, they needed more teaching, of course. But you know, faith is based on knowledge. People have a mistaken idea about faith. They think it's a leap in the dark. No, it's according to knowledge. You believe in God, therefore you got something to believe in. It's not a leap in the dark. So since faith is based on knowledge, then our faith can continually increase because our knowledge continually increases. It has to be so. And I do not believe that true ministers of the Word will ever be indifferent to the spiritual state of their people. I heard one preacher make a statement one time. I'm sorry to say he was a Baptist preacher, at least he claimed to be. He said, well, said he didn't worry about his people too much, said they didn't care much about him, and he didn't care much about them. I thought that was an awful statement. I got the impression that he didn't care if the whole congregation went down to eternal perdition, sound like. And I thought how terrible that is. I don't believe that's really the mark of a man of God. I think that man needed to sit down and take inventory in his life there. And what is it that had caused the Apostle Paul to have all this joy that he's speaking about there in verse 9 and all that? He heard that their faith was still intact. So whenever you hear about religious progress, that makes the man of God happy. I don't know of anything that I'd rather see than to see people grow in grace and in the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. It's a great thing. So what is the ministry of the Word designed for? The perfecting of our faith. So it's to make you grow in grace and knowledge of the Lord Jesus. Well, we're going to stop there. That's our lesson.